Can't wait to ask a question to Sean Morash today that I've been waiting to ask for 2 days. If you listen to Evan and Tiki a couple days ago, I got fooled by a Wedding Singers sequel.
I didn't do the homework. There's your question answered.
Yeah, so I asked Sean because my thesis was sequels are only successful if they're done within, like, recency of the original movie.
I'm sorry. My 15 hours at Giant Camp yesterday, I didn't get a chance.
And so what I said was, hey, Sean, I'll give you a job. You got 2 days to do this. Can you do some research to either prove me right or wrong? Doesn't matter, because it's just a thought that sequels are not successful if they aren't pumped out immediately. The Happy Gilmore waited a long time, and I think Happy Gilmore was a fine movie.
Right.
But it's tough to have success when it's that long a period of time. So I asked Sean, can you do the research on Friday? We'll have some fun. You have already jumped on this to say you have not done the research.
I told Tommy it was coming, and I said I didn't do it, didn't have time. Can't wait for Evan to bring it up.
I'm surprised you remembered that I told you, and you even acknowledged, I can't wait till he brings it up, so I tell him.
Sean almost didn't come to work today.
Who didn't?
Sean.
Why?
I got home at 9:30 last night from the Meadowlands. That's why.
You know, most people have jobs that are really tough. They're digging ditches. They're doing tough stuff.
I didn't want one of those jobs.
You're going to whine and bitch about being a Giant Camp all day?
No. I'm going to whine and bitch about being in the car for 5 hours yesterday.
It took Evan 35 minutes.
Yeah.
To do what?
Get home.
No, it didn't. It took me like an hour. But that's not the point. Like, even on my worst days, understand we have a job that no one in their car wants to hear us complain about.
I'm not complaining about my job.
It sounded like that was, you almost didn't come to work today. No. That's what Tiki said.
Tiki said that. I was always coming to work today. I just didn't have time to get to the homework. I never have enough time. Give me 2 weeks, I'll get it to you.
So we don't have the information on how sequels do if they're done right after or a long time after?
Can I be honest with you?
Yeah.
I actually, on my train ride home 2 days ago, did start this investigation.
Oh.
I would say I spent a half an hour on it.
Oh, good. So what do you got?
The early returns are they don't happen.
What does that mean?
Like, actual sequels, not remakes.
Mm-hmm.
It is beyond rare that beyond 5 years they are made.
Interesting.
So it's not that they're, are they successful, they're not. It, like, Happy Gilmore 2 is what they call an anomaly.
By the way,
right.
I did 2 seconds of research, and I already found one. Top Gun Maverick.
Yes. Top Gun Maverick, Independence Day.
I'm saying Top Gun Maverick was awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm saying that was a great sequel, so we already found one. And I was at Giant Camp 2 yesterday, and I drove home with you, and within 2 seconds on Google, I found
Tommy, again, you may not know what this means. I know you're a lunkhead. I said they're beyond rare.
Okay,
rare doesn't mean they don't happen. There's just not a lot. To judge
I'm not suggesting that they're rare. What I'm saying is that I found the answer already. You could have came with Top Gun Maverick already as an answer. That is an answer to Evan's question. It's a sequel. The other Top Gun came out, what, in the 80s?
Yeah, it's a great answer, Tommy, and I appreciate that. You're 1,000% right. But the good news is I know my people. So I already did the research. I have a whole document.
Can I
right
ask
here.
You one question
how
real quick?
How many did you get?
Can I ask you a question before you do that?
I'll break down the list in a second. Tommy's got something to say. Go ahead.
Where do you... I know there were sequels to the original Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
What do you consider the Wahlberg one or the recent ones? What are those? They're not sequels. They're
kind of remade. They're like reimaginings.
Yes.
They're not sequels.
They're not sequels.
They're reimaginings of the original.
Correct. So, yeah. So the original Planet of the Apes came out in 1968, had a bunch of sequels, and they all came out within a few years of each other. Beneath the Planet of the Apes, all that kind of stuff. Those are sequels. The Wahlberg one was a remake. And then the Rise series is like a brand new series, which also had a bunch of different sequels. So they're just different.
That's how I view the Ghostbuster ones, too, by the way.
Yeah, that's a remake. That's a remake. There's a big difference between remakes and sequels. Now, the way I did this, because I did my research very carefully, is I looked at Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And I asked Rotten Tomatoes, I said, Rotten Tomatoes, tell me the most popular sequels in cinema history based on people's reviews. So I broke this down to 3 categories. I broke it down to Rotten Tomatoes, people's opinions, sequels that won Oscars, and highest grossing sequels of all time. And I put a little chart out there to see, okay, when did it come after the original?
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with the one the Oscars, because only 2 have won Oscars. You guys want to guess the 2 sequels that have won Oscars for best movie?
Godfather 2.
You nailed it. Godfather 2 won it. And that movie came out just a few years after the original. In fact, just to be exact, Godfather 2 came out in 1974, the original, 1972. So that is a quick turnaround.
But aren't we looking for sequels that were more than 10 years? Like, that's what we're looking for.
Well, here's what I'm looking for. My thesis has been, If a sequel is done within 10 years, it has a higher chance of success than one that takes longer than 10 years.
So we're looking for sequels that were longer than 10 years.
That were successes.
Right. So Maverick, Top Gun Maverick, was one.
Absolutely.
The other one I brought up the other day was Twisters.
Twisters was another one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even see it, so I have no idea what the second one, like the sequel was.
The problem was, do we consider that a success, the sequel? Because I don't have it as highest revenue. I don't have it as like Rotten Tomatoes great reviews on. I'm not saying it's a bad movie, but what are we judging good on? Because those three categories, Oscars, revenue, and Rotten Tomatoes, at least has facts to back up that people like it.
Right.
Forget my opinion, forget your opinion, like other people like the movie. But anyhow, I just want to finish this. There's one other movie that won an Oscar. You nailed Godfather 2.
So I know it too. It's Return of the King, Lord of the Rings.
Look at you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do research or you smart?
Smart. I like movies.
Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Those were good.
Oh, yeah.
And when you watch them, it's so much better than the originals.
Which, that's another rarity.
Because the originals don't have the CGI. They don't have the ability to make it look, I don't know, modern.
Right.
Even though it was in the 2000s.
Right.
So, you're right. Those are really good.
And it didn't win Best Picture, but Dark Knight, which Heath Ledger won an Academy Award for, and he was a big part of that movie.
100%.
Dark Knight's one of the great sequels of all time.
I almost disqualify comic book movies, I gotta be honest.
Well, there's a lot of them on here. And look, you're gonna get...
because you're kind of not sequels, you're just kind of like, we're gonna do it
different.
We're gonna do it again.
Like, for example, the highest revenue from a sequel of all time.
Avengers Endgame.
Avengers Endgame. You are so good at this.
Right.
You could tell me you did research, or you could just say,
no,
smart.
I just
but
I
when
like
was
movies.
The last when what was the previous
I'm gonna
one?
Tell you that. So 2019 was the installment. The one before that was 2019, 2018, 2015, and 2012.
We're looking for sequels that were longer than a decade.
No, they're rare. That's my point here.
Right.
I'll give you a few of them. Now, in terms of Rotten Tomatoes, according to Rotten Tomatoes, and for those that are not aware, Rotten Tomatoes, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is user reviews on a movie.
Yes.
Okay. The highest Rotten Tomatoes score for a sequel of all time. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
This one, I don't know if you'll be able to get, Tommy.
I have two guesses.
It's a recent movie, too, by the way.
Okay. Ooh. I was going to go either Avatar 2.
Avatar 2 is a great guess. It is not Avatar 2. By the way, Avatar 2 is the second highest grossing sequel of all time.
Avengers Endgame kind of doesn't count. It's a sequel to like 16 movies, fair. So it's like a superpower. I'm just saying, Avengers Endgame is really 17 movies.
That's what Sean was talking about with the comic book stuff.
I was going to guess Empire Strikes Back, but that's not a recent movie.
Nah, you're not going to get this one's a tricky one for Tommy.
Mamma Mia 2?
No. Paddington 2.
Get out.
I saw that with my wife. Very good, by the way. Both Paddingtons are excellent.
Now, Paddington, the original was 2014. The sequel was 2017. So, very quick turnaround.
Right. So, we're still waiting for the one that's 10 years in length.
Right. But my point so far is, it's proving my point that the most successful sequels always come out within just a few years of the original. The second highest rated movie from Rotten Tomatoes, Toy Story 2, which is one you brought up, right, Sean?
Yes.
That came out in 1995, the original, 1995. Mm. The next one I've never heard of. Maybe you're aware of this.
You said the same year, dude.
Yes.
1999, 1995.
Okay.
You said 95 twice.
I apologize. 1999, 1995.
Right. 4 years.
The next highest is Three Colors Red.
Don't even know idea what that
I
is.
I think it's a foreign movie. The next one is 007 Goldfinger,
right?
Which came out in 1964.
Yeah, but those are kind of, I mean, you can't throw Bond movies in there.
Like, all right, fine.
They're like, those aren't sequels. That's just kind of, let's do another Bond movie.
Now, here's the one. Here's the winner. In terms of it took more than 10 years.
Yeah.
And it, according to Rotten Tomatoes, one of the highest rated movies of all time. And this is where Sean can take a bow. Toy Story 3.
Aha. Mm.
Because Toy Story 3 came out in 2010. Toy Story 2 was 1999.
Right.
So right on that clip at 11 years. Then you got Godfather 2, which we've already talked about, two years later. So what I've learned here.
What about Maverick?
I think that's a good answer, by the way.
Yeah.
It wasn't listed as one of the top Rotten Tomato movies or highest revenue.
What about the Jurassic Park series? Or is that in the ones that don't count?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think when they remade the first one to start up this, it didn't feel like a sequel.
Right.
It doesn't.
I'm stunned because I just went to Rotten Tomatoes and Maverick got 96% as far as critics and 99% for audiences.
Where is it ranked then? Because I only did the top 10.
Know.
Maybe
no,
it's outside of the top 10.
Maybe. I just went to its actual rating, like the actual page for Top Gun Maverick.
Well, Top Gun Maverick come out during the pandemic and therefore it didn't gross well in the theaters?
No, 2022. I don't know if that's close to the pandemic. People still weren't going to the theaters.
I think that's a... But that is, you know...
I got to tell you, I waited. I waited to it came into my.
I did too. I got so used to watching movies at home.
No, I get that.
So that could happen, but who knows?
That movie absolutely qualifies.
Here's another one for you: Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
How many years was that?
Like 19.
And that did well
because it was. I mean, it was Indiana. Remember how long? You remember how long it was?
Yeah,
Harrison Ford. Yeah. I think a lot of it was CGI
to make him look younger.
Make him look younger. Yeah. And I remember because we watched it in a theater. For some reason, Tegan, my youngest, loves Indiana Jones.
Right.
And so we went to the theater to watch it. And I'm like, man, Harrison Ford looks like, how the hell did they do that? it was all AI.
Right.
It was at least 12 years.
Was that considered a success?
Maybe 15 years.
Did people like the movie, though?
I don't know.
That's kind of the point.
I don't know.
Because another one I could bring out to you is.
We went to see it. Right. That was one of the few that we've gone to a theater to go see.
Another movie that is a sequel is Rocky Balboa. Like, remember when they waited so long between Rocky V and what I look at as Rocky VI, Rocky Balboa? But did we like it? Mm. Like, I remember seeing it, and I was like, eh.
Yeah, and Creed doesn't count, right?
No, because that's not, it's just a new series. Yeah. Series. So, I think it's a challenge. Here's the point of all this research, other than talking about old movies.
Mm-hmm.
The most successful sequels are the ones that come out soon after the original was a success.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of failures when you're talking about 30 years later. Independence Day was a huge debacle.
How did Mary Poppins Returns do?
Is that a sequel?
It was. It came out 52 years later.
Oh, wow. But that can't be a sequel.
It's not a sequel, obviously.
Come on. Anyhow, good job, Sean, not doing the research, because I really enjoyed doing this research, and I would have been in a tough spot if you came out and said you did the research, and then I would have sat back and not been able to show my research.
Well,
so I'm happy that you're lazy.
Part of the reason I told Tommy I wasn't doing it is you know Tommy, and he agreed with me on the train. Evan's doing it anyway.
Well, I did it to protect the fact that I knew you weren't going to do it.
And now I know going forward I never have to do it because you're always going to protect it.
No, but I don't want to do that. I want you to be able to do it. Was this not fun enough for you? Like, if it was an NFL draft study, would you have been more likely to do it? Did the movie sequel thing not work for you?
No, I think it's a good thing to do. I think what doesn't work for me anymore is being out of college and doing homework. I think that's what doesn't work for me.
But you don't consider that fun homework? Like, well, I'm reading about sequels.
No.
It's interesting.
I don't.
A lot of them are kids' movies. It took a decade plus.
Yes.
So Finding Dory, which was 2018, the original Finding Nemo was, I don't know how long that was. It was at least 15 years ago.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Right?
Definitely, yes.
The Incredibles 2, which was 2018. The original was in 2004. Tron Legacy, which I didn't see. That one was Dumb and Dumber 2, which was 2014.
But Dumb and Dumber 2 stunk, right?
Yes.
We didn't like that movie.
It was really stupid.
Yes.
But that's Blues Brother 2000.
Another crappy movie.
Right, that one was terrible. Zoolander 2, terrible. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, too. I think you said that one, Sean.
Yeah, wasn't...
Oh, no, you said Mamma Mia. You said Mamma Mia.
Are they the same movie?
No.
But that was 14 years later. The original was in 2002.
And you see what's going on? All these movies are terrible.
Yeah. Mary Poppins Returns was actually pretty good, but it didn't feel like a sequel.
You know why the kid movies work? I think I have a theory on why the kid movies are successful. Completely different audience.
Yeah.
You're just starting over with
it. And by the way, Avatar was the second one. That was 13 years later.
Yeah, for sure.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. It was a long time between movies.
Avatar, you're right. I'm looking at the way I wrote it down. It was 2009 was the original and 2020. And you know what I would say? I think that period of time is right on the edge.
Mm.
Because when Avatar 2 came out, which I did see in the theaters, I'll never forget that one.
Yeah.
It was long. That was my only issue with it. Like, I took a break in the middle of the movie.
Did it feel like the same story?
It felt like the exact same story.
They were just underwater. They're
just in water.
That's all.
I agree.
Instead of flying.
And I didn't love it. So I know it grossed a lot of movie. It's the second highest revenue from a sequel. But I'd argue with it right now. I think it sucked. And I think 13 years is right on the edge.
Mm-hmm. The reason cartoons work is because the characters don't age. You could do Toy Story 12, as long as you have a Tom Hanks and people to voice it, that's fine. I'm proud of you, though, by the way, Evan.
Why?
You didn't jam in one of your worst takes you ever had.
What's that?
That Back to the Future 2 is better than the original. Well, I'm very proud that you didn't, because it's not.
I'll tell you the reason I never brought it up. So I do still think that. I'm a big Back to the Future guy, as is Jet. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been Marty McFly twice in a row on Halloween.
Nice.
It doesn't fit any of these things in terms of like...
No, because there's only 4 years between the movies.
Right. It also didn't gross the highest revenue. It didn't win an Oscar. And for whatever reason, Rotten Tomatoes likes it, but not nearly as high as these other movies. So I would just be jamming it in because of my own opinion. I was being independent on this. I was really studying
IBO.
The whole sequel phenomenon.
Sean, for not doing your homework, we had a pretty good discussion.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's because we don't need Sean half the time. I just need to do it myself. It's one thing I've learned. And Tommy was very impressive. He knows a lot.
I'm mad about the Paddington, too, because I saw it. And one of the reasons I watched it is because I went, what was this rated? Because I'm a big Rotten Tomatoes guy. Right. I live and die by it. I'm like, excuse me? It's like a 99 on there. I don't know if it's worthy of a 99, but it's an excellent movie.
It's the highest rated from Rotten Tomato in sequel cinema history.
Is that right? The highest?
That's what higher than Godfather 2, higher than Toy Story 3, higher than Goldfinger, higher than everything.
Did I miss when Rotten Tomatoes became Rolling Stone, by the way?
How else do you judge?
There's not a lot of other ways to get judgments on these things.
Because think about this, Sean Teague, everybody. My opinion is my opinion. Your opinion is your opinion. We want to be fair about, well, what do the majority think? You know what I mean? Like, so I could sit here all day, like Tommy brought up with Back to the Future, and say it's the best of all time. I know that's just my opinion. So the beauty of Rotten Tomatoes is it lets you see what most of America thinks, whether we agree with it or not.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't necessarily agree with that list. What?
What? I can't even. Why are their pants hanging by you?
Yeah, so this has been going on for a day now. I was listening to Big Mac last night because I really wanted to hear him, you know, go crazy on Brian Cashman about how much he loves him and how everyone's an idiot. And all of a sudden, as he's really getting into his open, he's like, yeah, Brian Cashman, kiss his ass. He's like, why are there jeans hanging from the studio right now?
Did he? I just noticed it too.
So he said it, he moved on. And then today, when I was doing the crossover with Sal, I said, you know, we were talking about Marcus Stroman, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, I was like, what the hell's going on with these pants? And so he has informed me that BT decided to hang his pants up there. I don't know why.
What?
I don't have context, but BT, who was not here today, or was here but was at home, hung his pants on like a bar in the studio.
No chance!
I'm going to take a picture of it.
Did he lose a bet and it signals that Sal wears the pants in their relationship?
Come on, dude.
I have no idea. But it's random.
Come on, give it to me.
And it's one of those things where it's hanging out here, and it takes you a while before you notice.
Yeah, it was weird. It was like I was staring at a highlights magazine, you know?
Yeah.
You're like looking for it.
Yeah, so BT's hanging his jeans here. Maybe he wet himself and hung it up.
I've got no ass.
All right, let's get to some of your calls. A lot on the table. The Mets, the Yankees, Micah Parsons hates Dallas, and of course, we're talking sequels at 888-808-1019. Let's go to Rico in Massapequa. What's up, Rico?
What's happening, guys? Here's another good one. All the Star Wars made in the 70s, and they come out with the 90s with the prequels. Sequels, but with a kid Darth Vader. Right? Remember that?
Yes.
The kid Darth Vader.
Yeah.
And another good one, Willy Wonka. The next Willy Wonka was with the prequel, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
That's, you know what? That's a good. Prequels to me are a completely different animal.
Right.
Because I think the beauty of the prequel, and I'm a huge fan of prequels. Like, we've seen TV shows that are prequels.
Yeah.
What was the Superman TV show with the prequels?
You mean?
Oh, Smallville?
Smallville,
yes.
One of the most successful
shows.
Show. It actually is such a brilliant concept because I think people like knowing where it's going to go, and this is the slow build to get there.
Right. How did we get here? It's what Star Wars is doing with all the spinoffs of the characters. So Boba Fett and what was the other one? Mandalorian.
Yep.
Andor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just tells you the story before the story.
It's Game of Thrones doing it too.
100% right. I haven't watched the Game of Thrones ones.
It's a brilliant idea. I mean, you couldn't pay me to watch Game of Thrones or Star Wars, but my point is, like, I respect the concept. It's a brilliant concept.
And Phantom Menace is an abomination. So it actually points to your point. It was horrific. Star Wars. The first prequel was hideous.
I don't even know what you're saying, but if I'm taking a victory, thank you. You're welcome. Let's go to Jay in North Jersey. What's going on, Jay?
Hey, Jake.
Hey, what's up, guys? I call in a few times. Quick baseball and a football point.
Yes.
Evan, you're very technical. I know you do all the books with the Mets and all this stuff, but can you see the future with baseball where each starting pitcher only goes six innings max? Because that's where it's turning to be. And then everybody just builds up their bullpens. I think that's the future of baseball. You're not going to see complete games anymore. Do you agree with that?
I think we're already there. I mean, how many guys go deeper than six innings already in baseball? If I had to predict, though, Jay, I think it's going to go the other way. And I'm not sure when. I do know that right now, that baseball you described of no complete games and guys going six innings, I mean, we're already kind of in that planet.
Yeah.
It's moved that way. But I think in sports, you know, Tiki made this point, turned out to be right about a year ago about, hey, running back's coming back. I think the starting pitcher's going to make a comeback.
Hmm.
I don't know when, but I think we're going to start to see organizations put less of an emphasis on velocity and spin.
Right, 100 mile an hour, you know, studs. Because we're actually better suited to be relievers.
Right. Because you blow yourself out after like 35 pitches.
Right. Have a 100 mile an hour fastball and a slider and be a close and be a relief pitcher as opposed to trying to do that and then mix in three or four other pitches to be a starter.
Yeah. I think that eventually we're going to see that comeback, and it may happen because baseball implements rules that tries to, you know, kind of convince managers and teams to go about things differently. We're almost rewarded for going deeper into games, but we're not there yet, and we're not going to be there for a while. That's something that takes a while to grow.
Right.
But I love the sport. I love pitching. I know that we live in a world in which going to the ballpark to see a pitching matchup is dead, and that used to be a thing. Like,
it wasn't that long ago.
I know.
When Jacob DeGrom was here.
Dude, but my wife knows this better than anybody. My Mets schedule on games I go to, because I do not go to every game. I used to. I don't do it anymore. I pick my spots. It was literally around his schedule. If Jake is pitching, I'll move things around. Now it's a Tuesday. You know, the kids are doing this. The kids are doing that.
It's on the mound. Yeah, I don't really care.
And that's not a knock
on. I'll score from home.
Right. It's not a knock on Kodai Senga, Sean Manaea, or any of these guys. It's just that the uniqueness of, hey, I got to be in the ballpark to watch this guy.
Yeah, well, you're not guaranteed. It was almost like you were guaranteed to see something great happen.
Right.
Whereas now it's kind of like, I have no idea. It could be great. Probably is not going to be.
But you know what else? Like, if there were more, forget just the Mets having that guy. If there were more starting pitchers that were just stars the way they used to be, I would probably be more drawn in on, hey, that pitching matchup, I got to go to that game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And we don't have that. Like, we just don't have that sexy pitching matchup that we used to have.
They're in the league. We just don't have them necessarily.
There are very few, though.
Yeah.
Zach Wheeler, Paul Skeens.
Skubal.
Tarik Skubal, absolutely.
You'd want to see those kids. They happen to be kids, but you'd want to see them pitch.
You're 1,000% right. But if the Tigers came to town and Skubal was pitching, I'd make it my mission.
I'm trying to think
off the
top of my head, though. Who else?
That's
probably it.
I think when
Maybe Ohtani, but it looks like he's jacked up again.
Yeah, I think the Ohtani thing, they're saying cramps, so hopefully it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. The thing with Ohtani is you're really not going to see him pitch. You're going to see him do both because it's so unique.
Right.
You know, it's not like he's that kind of pitcher.
It almost doesn't matter that he's pitching.
Right.
You're just going to go see him because he's just a superstar.
And he's doing something that no one else does. Yeah. He's able to hit at a high level, pitch at a high level. But to your point, like the list of guys that I would change my schedule to go watch live. And obviously, everyone has a different perspective on this. I'm sure there are people listening right now who say nobody. They wouldn't pay to see Zach Wheeler. They wouldn't pay to see Tarik Skubal. But to me, it's, bro, Skubal. And I don't even know if it is Zach Wheeler anymore because he's on the Phillies and I've seen him a lot and screw him. So it's really Skubal.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anybody else I'd pay to see. Is there anybody else? Am I missing anybody?
No. It's Skubal and it's Skeens.
Skeens. You're right. I'm sorry. I forgot Skeens. You're right. Skubal and Skeens.
We had that with the All-Star game.
I forgot. Random day, they were on. I watched Skubal pitch. I just watched the entire game.
It was a Sunday night game, Teague.
Sunday night. I was just like, why am I watching this game? But I couldn't stop watching it. And he pitched. He was great.
Yeah. And that's lucky when ESPN can get him on a Sunday night. Because then you got the eyes on you. In fact, I think the Tigers are the Sunday night game this weekend, but they are not pitching Tarik Skubal.
The last two times they've been on Sunday, it was 2 out of 3 weeks they got Skubal.
That's not bad.
It's almost like they arranged it.
I know. I mean, this Sunday, it's Tigers.
Why not? I would.
Right, but they... AJ Hinch ain't listening.
No, true.
This weekend, it's Tigers-Phillies. Very appealing Sunday night game, I think, for all of us as baseball fans. Now the baseball starts. We had the trade deadline yesterday. Yankees are red hot. They win 3 straight games against Tampa. The Mets are coming off 3 straight losses. But they're home, and they've got new toys to play with. The Yankees are down in Miami, which will essentially be a home game because it'll be all Yankee fans down there. It's very special when the Yankees go to Miami. It only happens once every 2 years now with the new baseball schedule. Yankees, Marlins, and the Mets are at home against the San Francisco Giants beginning a 3-game series. Looks like the weather's been cleared, and we're going to have some nice weather and some nice baseball. We will be joined by the Yankees general manager, Brian Cashman. He'll come up at 4 o'clock. But let's get to your calls. Yankee fans, Met fans, Micah Parsons has demanded a trade. There is a lot on the table. 888-808-1019. Nick is calling from Queens. What's up, Nick?
We already know what's up. The Mets won the trade deadline. We got no rentals. We got win now. We got guys that got to compete to get paid. And you know what the Yankees got? Let me tell you, Tiki, you're a new Yankee fan. Same old Yankees. Same old Yankees. Let me tell you, Ryan Cashman. Oh, we won the trade deadline. We won. We got everybody we need. We're going to go everywhere. We won everything. No. 8 months. You know what's going to be said on this radio station? Evan, tell him.
I don't know what's going to be said.
Fire Cashman.
Oh, fire Cashman. You may be right because that's what we do or that's what fans do when things don't go well.
Yeah.
But it is unfair.
Feels like it's not. It can be kicked off this season. Like, kick it away this season.
Not really. They went to the World Series last year and Yankee fans still do it. So yeah, he's right that if the Yankees don't
win.
But
what else could he have done?
You're speaking rationally.
I know. I'm just a rational person.
I know, but he's right that the Yankee fan will then turn on Brian. Right now they love Brian because I think they like the trade deadline as they should. But he is right that if things end badly, unless it ends with a World Series, it ultimately turns into blame Brian Cashman. Now, I don't think they should do that. I think he just had a great trade deadline. I look at this roster and I say they're good enough. If they don't win, it's the player's fault. It's the manager's fault.
Right.
That's how I view it. But the other thing that our last caller said that is really unfair, and it shows it's like politics today. You don't actually care what your party says because whatever they say, you're just going to agree with them. You're just going to be like, that's right. That's right. Doesn't even matter. That's what we do sometimes with sports, and we shouldn't. Like our last caller said, David Stearns and the Mets won the trade deadline, and the Yankees, they suck. If the Mets had acquired the same relievers the Yankees had required, acquired, Met fans would say, we won the deadline. Our bullpen is loaded.
Right. And we got controllability.
And you throw that in. So there's no way that you, if you're being fair, unless you're just going to be, you know, a sycophant, the way people are in politics sometimes, the way they're in sports, if you're going to take your glasses off and be fair, they both did really well.
Right.
So to say, hey, if we would have got those guys, I wouldn't have been happy. That's crazy. If the Mets got Camilo Duvall, we were talking about him a few days ago on the Rico Brogna. Now, I think there are differences between all these guys. There are risks with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, both teams went out and, to borrow a phrase, went to town. Because I think both teams did that, improving their bullpens. Kendrick is calling from Suffern. What's up, Kendrick?
What's up, guys? No, it's a great week of sports here, Evan. And finally, MetLife is guaranteed a championship this weekend. So I don't know if you're going to see CM Punk and Gunther or you're going to go for Cody Rhodes and John Cena, but MetLife is winning too.
That's a great way to look at things this weekend. It's a championship weekend for a change at MetLife Stadium.
For sure, for sure. You know, I wanted to call in because you guys touched on this earlier, and I know Brian Cashman's coming in, and I would love to ask the GM of one of the New York teams about the relief pitching and why they targeted so much of it. Because for me, you know, looking at the Dodgers last year and looking at both teams this year at the deadline, I'm starting to think that if you remember, Juan Soto hit it off Hunter Gaddis last year and Devin Williams pitched in game two. And then obviously Alonso hit the home run in game three against the Brewers. Are teams trying to stack their bullpen to avoid, you know, playoff, I guess
familiarity
tendencies and then familiarity. Exactly. Cause if you look at basketball, right, the regular season, it's three pointers, it's run and gun, no defense. They change the game in the postseason. It's, you know, rebounding and defense. In football, it's these $30 million wide receivers, $50 million quarterbacks, and then it's run and defense that wins in the playoffs. In baseball, I'm starting to think that this relief pitching is what wins championships. And I'm curious if, because now they have three or four high leverage arms in the pen, they could avoid allowing to see hitters and the relief pitchers coming in back to back days.
Oh, it's a great point.
It's a really good thought. I mean, it's either that or, as we talked about a little bit yesterday, you know that starters just aren't getting as deep as they used to. Even if you have a good start, Clay Holmes is a good starter for the Mets. We know he's capped at five and maybe a five and a third, and so you're going to need to pick up 12 outs at some point. And so you really need a lot of relievers. And so avoiding having to pitch them every day is something that I think you think about as the season winds down and when you get in the postseason.
Oh, that's an all of the above. Because I think that the lack of trust in starting pitchers, the fact that starters don't go deep into games, the fact that this marketplace didn't have a lot of great starters available, and then you combine it with what I think is a really good point by Kendrick, because this has become a thing over the last few years. I remember it specifically in 2019 with the Yankees, where Aaron Boone had the lanes they like to talk about. Mm-hmm. This is a good lane for Adam Ottavino. This is a good lane for this left-handed reliever. And it makes sense on paper until the same hitters see the same pitchers over and over and over and over again in a best of seven series.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great point that the more relievers you trust that you have, the less often you have to give them the same matchups. It's a great point. I think it's not the end-all, be-all. Like, I don't think that's the reason why David Stearns, Brian Cashman, and a lot of general managers were really aggressive on bullpen arms. But I think it's a great thought. Because in a best-of-seven series with all the off days, where you can basically use relievers every day, you kind of can. Mm-hmm. Game 1-2 and game 6-7, they're only back-to-backs. And then you've got that one set of games, 3-4-5, yeah, where, yes, it's back-to-back-to-back. So, essentially, it's not crazy to have a reliever pitching 6-of-7 postseason games in a series. And they're probably seeing the same hitters. Yeah. And by the time you get to game six, it's like, I've seen this guy a lot.
Also, think about what happened with the Dodgers a year ago. And once they got to the postseason, their starting rotation was severely compromised. So they had to go bullpen day.
Right.
And so because they were so deep with their bullpen, they were able to win a World Series. So you saw with the Braves, too, 3 years ago, whenever it was, 4 years ago that they won. So bullpens have, I think, an outsized importance in the postseason differently than it does in the regular season.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's important in the regular season, but I think in the postseason, it just gives you so much more versatility on what your plan of attack is.
Well, and also in the postseason, because of all of the off days, you just can use them more.
Yeah.
Like, I think the problem with the regular season, or this discussion in the regular season, because you even brought this up to me the other day when I was bitching about Mendy kind of punting a game with keeping Jose Buteau in, and you're like, well, you got to think about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, in the postseason, because there are so many off days, you never play more than 3 days in a row. You don't have to do that.
Right.
And so it allows you to be even more aggressive with your bullpen. Justin is calling from South Hempstead. What's up, Justin?
What's up, boys? You guys are talking about Happy Gilmore 2, and I'm baffled by the love that people are giving this movie. I have some quick reasons as to why I think this is one of, if not the worst movie that I've seen in over a decade.
Wow. I have not seen it, so fill us in, Justin.
All right. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but first of all, you guys know there's a ton of cameos in this movie. And I feel like it's an overuse of cameos where it takes away from the specialty of a cameo. Hmm. If you go back to the first Happy Gilmore, when Bob Barker appears, it's so shocking. And you can't believe, oh, my God, they got Bob Barker. But if you have a cameo every single minute, it's not special anymore. It takes away from the specialty.
All right. Keep going. Because I have opinions on all this. I saw the movie. I'm hearing you out. I didn't think it was the greatest of all time, but I certainly didn't think it sucked as the worst movie in 10 years. That's point number one. What else you got?
Okay, so I've never seen a movie have to actually show scenes from the first movie to remind audiences what happened in the first movie. Shouldn't you know going in, like, who's this movie made for? Shouldn't people be aware of these characters beforehand? They're actually showing, if you total it up, they're probably around 4 or 5 minutes of the original movie being shown in this new movie. Never seen it done in the history of cinema.
Wow, that's interesting.
I got one more.
Yes.
It is an ugly movie to look at. I heard someone today compare it to a T-Mobile commercial. Like, it just visually is a depressing sort of visuals to it. Did not capture the same magic of that first movie's visual. So I think, on the top of all that, just it wasn't funny. The biggest sin I had with the movie was I didn't laugh once or twice.
Justin, that's the key to a movie, especially a comedy like this. And my critique on Monday was I didn't laugh nearly as much as I did for the original.
Right, the original, you're laughing out loud.
Oh, man, I was belly laughing. So that part, that's subjective. Like, I laughed a little bit. I was entertained, but I didn't laugh nearly as much as the original.
I don't know. Is comedy subjective?
Yeah. You find something funny, I don't find funny.
Yeah, I laughed my ass off the whole movie and Evan didn't. So from that standpoint, it probably is subjective.
Absolutely. And our last caller said he didn't laugh at all.
I guess it's relatability. So it's subjective, but it's really, can you relate to what he's talking about?
It's if you think something's funny. Like, funny is very difficult to kind of, like, put your arms around.
You have to have a relatability to it. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense to you.
I don't know. So sometimes I laugh at stuff that I can't relate to. Right. I don't know if at least for me, it doesn't work that way. Mm. It's just if I find it funny. And again, it's very tough to describe, like, what makes something funny. I don't know. I watched a movie last night. It was actually created by Adam Sandler's company on Netflix, a Netflix exclusive. It was called Sort of Pregnant or Half Pregnant or Kind of Pregnant.
Kind of Pregnant with Amy Schumer.
With Amy Schumer.
That was dreck.
See, here's what's funny.
How are you kind of pregnant?
Do you want me to tell you what happened?
I mean, it's not highly rated on, I'm sure, Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't know how it was rated. I don't like to see the ratings before I see the movie. I just want to see it. And me and my wife wanted to laugh. We went through a ton of options, and they were all, like, depressing.
Did you laugh?
Did I laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I did. For the first 25 minutes, I was laughing. I was like, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last hour was like...
It got serious?
Well...
Because you're kind of pregnant?
Here's the thing.
Not really pregnant?
She wasn't pregnant. She was lying. And whenever someone is caught in like a big lie...
Oh, it gets uncomfortable.
You get uncomfortable with how it's going to end.
Right.
And so I guess for that standpoint... See, I'll take you guys behind the scenes. Not you, Tiki. You're well aware of this. Joe Shane, the general manager of the New York Giants, thought I was going to have relations with my wife last night based on us deciding via text message what movie we're going to watch.
Uh-huh.
And so I made a comment like, oh, sounds good. And you were like, what's going on? I said, ah, nothing. You don't care about it. It's just a movie with my wife. And Joe Shane, that Joe Shane was like, yeah, movie with your wife.
And then I said, and chill.
That was great.
So I had Tinky Barb and Joe Shane basically implying that we were not Netflixing last night. But we did Netflix last night. That Amy Schumer movie.
Did you chill?
I mean, I'm not getting into that. It's private stuff. Jeez. But the points our last caller made about, I completely disagree with. I didn't think there were too many cameos. Mm. I don't think it spoils a cameo because there's a lot of them. If there are celebrities that you're familiar with, it still has the same effect. So I completely disagree with that part. The showing the old clips, I don't mind that because I think there are a lot of people who didn't see the original. And you want a movie to stand up in a way in which you don't have to go back and invest time in watching the original.
So our intern today, Zach, who's in college, so what, early 20s, didn't see the original but watched the, obviously, number two. And he goes, yeah, I didn't go back and see number one, but it's fine because they showed old clips. So there you go. If you're in your young 20s, you didn't see Happy Gilmore 1, they got you up to speed on it.
That was the thing I disliked the most out of Happy Gilmore. That was my biggest pet peeve. And after talking to the intern, Zach, he swayed me the other way that I had to realize.
Because it was 29 years ago.
There are a lot of people who never saw it, never took the time to see it. And it didn't hurt it.
It's not an iconic move. Like, you don't have to go. It's not like the Goonies.
And those
you don't
moments,
have to go see the, you know, Happy Gilmore. You got to see the Goonies.
And even I caught myself. I've seen the movie. I rewatched the movie recently. Seeing those moments made me laugh again. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't take away from it. I didn't think it was necessary, but I still laughed at them.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all. Look, I think what it comes down to is it funny or not? And it is subjective.
And he took a big shot at New Jersey there, too.
Who did?
That caller.
The caller?
What did he say?
He said it looked like a T-Mobile commercial. Wasn't shot. He said it looked ugly, right? The entire movie is filmed in New Jersey. All New Jersey golf
that's
courses.
That's not what he was saying.
All New Jersey locations.
I think he was talking about the cinematography.
Yeah. I don't think he was talking about the state of New Jersey. Is that how you
he
took
said
it?
He said it didn't look pretty.
Have you been to Jersey? Jersey's gorgeous, dude.
I agree. There's parts of Jersey wouldn't have any. I was at one of the golf courses that was in the movie.
Yes. There you go.
Bedminster.
He doesn't know what cinematography means. He knows cinnamon rolls, not cinematography.
I was going to say, let's go to Adam and Wanto. What's up, Adam?
Hey, guys. Big fan. Sean, I'm the Facebook guy that was at Fanatic Fest. Thanks again for all the help you gave me back then.
Oh, you're welcome.
When you guys get a chance, specifically Evan and Tiki, I have a great rabbit hole for you guys to go down.
Right.
Evan, if you haven't yet.
Yeah.
Are you aware of Mark Gooden, the, quote, Mets beat writer on Twitter?
Yes, I'm very aware of Mark Gooden. I remember Craig got into a fight with him, and then we had to explain to Craig, Mark Gooden isn't real. And then I think he calmed down a little bit. So, yes, I'm well aware of Mark Gooden.
So, yesterday, after the trade deadline, Mark Gooden reported that he asked for number 31 from the New York Mets.
Yes.
The Mets obliged.
Yes.
Which has now gone viral because some guys in Detroit picked up the story and reported on it.
Oh, geez.
And kind of reprimanded the Mets for giving number 31 and said, Piazza, you know what? They could do that because Piazza's not really a Met. He's more of a Dodger. And he's the guy that threw a baseball bat at Roger Clemens, which obviously didn't happen.
They got it wrong. Here's the problem.
Mark Gooden yesterday. You have it?
Well, I don't know if I follow Mark Gooden. I probably do.
Here's what he wrote yesterday.
Yes.
Cedric Mullins, who wore 31 for his entire career in Baltimore, has asked the Mets to unretire Mike Piazza's 31 for him. The Mets have obliged. They are all in. Mullins will wear 31 with the Mets. And then you get responses, and one of which this account reposted. It said, what a joke. I hope this is fake news. SNY, Mets, at Mets, I guarantee you a New York Yankee would never unretire Derek Jeter's number or Reggie Jackson's number if someone asked for it. Where's the line in the sand? So what if someone asked for number 5 or 41 tomorrow?
Oh, there was. Remember that was a story that Clint Frazier asked for 7 from Mickey Mantle?
Uh-huh.
Here's the problem with social media and really the world. I am aware of Mark Gooden. I actually find him funny. Like there are, and he does a lot of political stuff, and it's like political Met stuff, and it's funny. Like I found him entertaining. I remember that time Craig got pissed off at him, and we were like, he's just not real. And then even Craig was like, yeah, all right, this guy's funny. If you don't know though, that's the dangers,
right? But like, he doubles down on this. I mean, there's a ton of like posts and subtweets that he's retweeting everybody.
Right? No, I know, because he creates this funny.
Uproar. Right.
Right. And the Giants had a guy. Who is the guy who there was a fake Giant reporter?
It's Steinberg.
Wesley Steinberg.
Wesley Steinberg.
And he would tweet out these ridiculously fake things. I eventually found out about it the way Sean has, and we know it's fake.
That Kelvin Benjamin stole cafeteria food, and that's why he was cut.
Right. I think that was one of them. And like, it's funny when you know it's not real. But the problem is, it's like me right now going on social media and seeing a story from Dallas about Micah Parsons that's crazy and over the top. Right. I don't know the reporter. I'm going to assume it's true. And now you're spreading fake information. So I appreciate the satire, but if it's not clear that it's satire,
right,
you just spread fake information. And that's not good either.
No.
So that's kind of the juxtaposition a guy like Mark Gooden is in. Not that it's his problem, right? But I genuinely find him funny. And I saw that tweet last night. And I laughed. I chuckled. You know? I was like, yeah, that's funny. But I also knew it wasn't real.
Right.
And you got people realize or thinking it's real. And I don't even blame them because, again, if there was a story coming out of Detroit or L.A. or Houston, a city I'm not knowing all the fake Twitter accounts about, it would be easy to be fooled, which is why you got to click on someone's account. You have to analyze it. You got to see if it's real or not.
Also, when you see something like that, wouldn't you check for other people saying it before you go nuts?
You should, but like, it's tough sometimes.
But that's like it's not a huge story, though.
Kind of is, though, if they're unretiring.
No, but it's not. It's not a huge story until it becomes a story. You know what I mean? Like, hey, Cedric Mullins wants Mike Piazza's jersey. It's no different than Abdul Carter.
Right, but the Mets obliged in the story.
Abdul Carter wants Lawrence Taylor's jersey. Now, someone says, oh, guess what? The Giants are going to unretire Lawrence. Fake account. Unretire Lawrence Taylor's number and give it to Abdul Carter. Now people are going to go in an uproar. So, like, in and of itself is not a big deal. It's just people's reaction to it. It creates the uproar. This is why I'm not on Twitter.
No, I get it. And look,
it's you can't follow it.
We're also different. Like, we work in the media, so when we see something, we feel like, hey, it's our job. We got to double, triple check this before we put it on the air. If you're just some dude or some gal just scrolling social media, you're probably not feeling as inclined to let me double and triple source this.
Right.
It's just, I saw this. That's crazy. And look, I got fooled the other day on the Wedding Singer sequel, which began the whole sequel discussion.
Right.
So sometimes it is very easy to get fooled.
This was intentional, by the way. This is why there are no blue check marks on X any longer.
I know. Screws the whole thing up. Mm. Brian Cashman isn't on Twitter, but I'm sure he's got like ghost accounts where he sees what people like Sean Morash write about him. We will talk to the general manager of the Yankees coming up, what happened at the deadline, what almost happened at the deadline. We will talk to the GM coming up in just a few minutes. It's Evan and Tiki on the Fan.